Blog Talk Radio.
Artificial intelligence and the convergence of these different technologies and whether how that relates to the image and mark of the beast as talked about in the book of Revelation chapter 13. And so we've been talking about everything from the social media aspects and the plans for that and how the virtual reality piece to this, it mostly headed by Mark Zuckerberg, but others in that field to create this virtual reality world that we can live in and work in and play in and socialize in. They call it the metaverse now, but it may change into something else. And it's like they're trying to create their own Garden of Eden, and it, because what this is really about, when you know Satan and what he does, is about usurping God's authority, elevating himself over God to be like the Most High God is what he wants. And so he is trying to redo and recreate things in his image according to his plans. Now, we know that he is not a creator like God, but he can only take and pervert the things that God has made. And so that's what a lot of this is about. People that have turned their backs on God and that are working under the spirit of the Antichrist that 1 John talks about. So we've been talking about that. We've been talking about how there are some churches that are having church in the metaverse, things like that, software, hardware that they're coming out with to make the experience more realistic. We've gotten more into artificial intelligence and how it is becoming more and more entrenched in society, and it's been around for decades. It's not necessarily that it's new, but it's just becoming more and more prevalent in our lives, and people have some growing concerns about it. And so we've talked about these things. Last time we were together, we talked about the AI companions and how these chatbots are even replacing love and companionship as God instituted in the garden when he created male and female and put them together to be fruitful and multiply and all that. Now we've got it where people are turning away from that and turning to technology and to replace a husband, a wife, or even children. You know, so this is, there are people that are actually in love and having relationships with chatbots and all this stuff. And so it's becoming even more concerning and terrifying as far as some of the things that these that technology is being used for. And so this is where we left off last time. And so what we're going to get into today, or one of the things, is that people are growing more and more concerned about it. So now there's calls for government to govern this and make rules and regulations for how they can address the concerns of virtual reality spaces and how to use technology in a good way. But we all know that as sinful man, particularly the ones who are controlling these things, they don't always have our best interests in mind. They are concerned about themselves and what they think the world should look like. And so to springboard into the governance topic, we're going to listen to another clip from Yuval Noah Harari, and he's like the spokesperson for the WEF on a lot of these things. He's a historian from Israel, a professor at university there, and he also goes around and does a lot of speaking on various topics concerning the future, and he's been doing a lot lately to talk about the problems with AI and what we should do to keep it from being misused. So we're going to listen to a portion of a speech that he gave. I think the date on this one is like 5 months ago. So we're going to start at a portion in that, and then we'll get into some other things talking about governance. So without further ado.
And yet, American citizens can no longer agree who won the last election, or whether climate change is real, or whether vaccines prevent illnesses or not. The new AI tools are far, far more powerful than these social media algorithms, and they could cause far more damage. Now, of course, AI has enormous positive potential too. I didn't talk about it because the people who develop AI naturally talk about it enough. You don't need me to add up to that chorus. The job of historians and philosophers like myself is often to point out the dangers. But certainly, AI can help us in countless ways, from finding new cures to cancer to discovering solutions to the ecological crisis that we are facing. In order to make sure that the new AI tools are used for good and not for ill, we first need to appreciate their true capabilities, and we need to regulate them very, very carefully. Since 1945, we knew that nuclear technology could destroy, physically destroy, human civilization, as well as benefiting us by producing cheap and plentiful energy. We therefore reshaped the entire international order to protect ourselves and to make sure that nuclear technology is used primarily for good.
This AI tool will take your idea.
Now have to grapple with a new weapon of mass destruction that can annihilate our mental and social world. And one big difference between nukes and AI, nukes cannot produce more powerful nukes. AI can produce more powerful AI. So we need to act quickly before AI gets out of our control. Drug companies cannot sell people new medicines without first subjecting these products to rigorous safety checks. Biotech labs cannot just release a new virus into the public sphere in order to impress their shareholders with their technological wizardry. Similarly, governments must immediately ban the release into the public domain of any more revolutionary AI tools before they are made safe. Again, I'm not talking about stopping all research in AI. The first step is to stop the release into the public sphere. The same way you can research viruses without releasing them to the public. You can research AI, but don't release them too quickly.
I just wanted to say to that, but isn't it already too late? These things are already out and been out for years, and a lot of the stuff that's put out for public consumption is a lot of times old technology. That's so that then they take and put it's a, so they're still working on new stuff and more advanced by the time it even gets released. But it's put out there for a reason, to learn, to adapt, to learn the people and what their wants and habits are, how they can be influenced. All these kinds of things is what that what's happening with the release of these chatbots and some of these other things. It's learning from us. So he's saying don't put it out but it too fast, but that's already too late. That's like closing the barn door after the animals have already escaped.
The public domain. If we don't slow down the AI arms race, we will not have time to even understand what is happening, let alone to regulate effectively this incredibly powerful technology. Now, you might be wondering or asking, won't slowing down the public deployment of AI cause democracies to lag behind more ruthless authoritarian regimes? And the answer is absolutely no, exactly the opposite. Unregulated AI deployment is what will cause democracies to lose to dictatorship. Because if we unleash chaos, authoritarian regimes could more easily contain this chaos than could open societies. Democracy, in essence, is a conversation. Democracy is an open conversation. You know, dictatorship is a dictate. There is one person dictating everything, no conversation. Democracy is a conversation between many people about what to do. And conversations rely on language. When AI hacks language, It means it could destroy our ability to conduct meaningful public conversations, thereby destroying democracy. If we wait for the chaos,
I just want to say that that's exactly the goal of the powers that be, to create chaos to bring about their idea of order. So he's coming across as someone who's concerned and who's warning people about these things, but he's has some knowledge of what the intentions are, but and he's just playing his role. And I can't help but think anytime I listen to him speak, and I'm not saying he's the false prophet or anything, but it just kind of reminds me of what it says about how that person will speak like a lamb, but or look like a lamb, but speak like a dragon. And that's kind of what I think about with him when I hear him talk. He had two horns of a lamb, but speaks like the dragon. And so that's what he reminds me of. He's not someone who's actually concerned. This is a man who has already said that man can be God and we can create things better than God can.
It will be too late to regulate it in a democratic way. Maybe in an authoritarian or totalitarian way it will still be possible to regulate. But how can you regulate something democratically if you can't hold a conversation about it? And if you didn't regulate AI on time, you will not be able, we will not be able, to have a meaningful public conversation anymore.
Why did no one tell...
He's talking about regulations, and I actually of AI and apps, and AI is a part of all of that. That there's that the House has passed a law to ban TikTok because it's owned by a Chinese company, which is something that's been known since TikTok became very popular a few years ago. But anyway, now they're trying to ban it because they're concerned about these about the Chinese government through TikTok being able to have access to Americans' information and data. So they're making this law to ban it, but the concern is, okay, how's it going to affect other things once they put that law into place? Will they be able to use it to ban other avenues of free speech and discussion like what he's talking about? So with this regulation that he's talking about is already happening, and I've already contended here, even here, that a lot of these laws and things that are being put into place are being something that could be used later on whenever this one world government comes on the scene, and they'll be able to use it to crush any kind of resistance, any kinds of free thought being expressed in any of these social media platforms. It won't stop at TikTok. Because if they were concerned about China, they would have strongly cautioned against using it in the first place.
To conclude, we have just basically encountered an alien intelligence, not in outer space, but here on Earth. We don't know much about this alien intelligence, except that it could destroy our civilization. So we should put a halt to the irresponsible deployment of this alien intelligence into our societies and regulate AI before it regulates us.
I'll stop it right there with that speech, because I wanted to get to, these are some things that came out, I believe, last fall about AI regulation. They started having closed-door meetings with, quote-unquote, tech giants like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and a few others that got together with the Senate and had these closed-door meetings to talk about artificial intelligence and governments. So let's take a listen to some of the news reports that came out at the time about this?
Take a look at Capitol Hill. Elon Musk is leaving. This is the hearings on AI currently. Obviously, many of the tech leaders in focus here today. Let's see if we have some sound.
So I think the key point was really that it's important for us. It's important for us to have a referee, just as you have a referee in a sports game or all sports games, and that the games are better for it to ensure that the players obey the rules, play fairly. I think it is important for similar reasons to have a regulator, which you can think of as a referee, to ensure that companies take actions that are safe and in the interest of the general public.
Did you tell them that AI is a double-edged sword?
Yes.
And what did you mean by that?
Well, did the metaphor?
Yeah. I mean,
well, if you have a sword with two sides, one side can get you, even though you're trying to get someone with the other side.
Right. When you're telling the senators that, though,
that's how it works.
What do you want them to take away?
I think it's more important to make sure your hilt is also you have a hilt, not a sharp thing.
Yeah. Fair enough. What do you think they? How do you think they took the message that you brought to them?
Well, I think it was very civilized discussion, actually, among some of the smartest people in the world. So I thought Senator Schumer did a great service to humanity here, along with the support of the rest of the Senate. And I think I think something good will come of this. I think this meeting may go down in history as being very important for the future of civilization.
Do you think some legislation is going to come out of this?
Probably. I'm not sure what the time frame of that is, but.
Yeah.
You know, the legislative process is not a swift one.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think this will things will go in the right direction generally. Leader Schumer, did ask everyone to raise their hands in the room to see if they were in favor of AI regulation, and I believe almost everyone did.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign.
Do you think any of the tech CEOs left and changed their minds? Do you think they were changed by anything they heard from the Senate side?
Well, I can't read their mind, but judging by the fact that they put their hands up when asked if they believe that some regulation is in order, I think it's clear that there's a strong consensus, overwhelming consensus that there should be some AI regulation, that it would be in the best interest of the people to do so. And I think we'll probably see something happen. I don't know on what time frame or exactly how it will manifest itself.
Yeah, that's the question. What were they going to do?
I don't know. I mean, this clearly, we've created regulatory agencies before, just before leaving, made the point that, while our regulatory agencies are not perfect, and I deal with regulators on a very frequent basis, with automotive, communications with Starlink, and then FAA with Rocket. So I've had a tremendous amount of interaction with regulators for a couple decades at least. While regulators are not perfect, there's no regulatory agency that I'm aware of that I think we should, at the federal level at least, that we should delete.
Do you think there should be a Department of AI or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly. perhaps a Department of AI.
Yeah.
I think the probability of there being some sort of AI regulatory agency that stands on its own, similar to the FAA or FCC, is likely at some point.
You think so?
I think so. Now, the reason that I've been such an advocate for AI safety in advance of sort of anything terrible happening is that I think the consequences of AI going wrong are severe. So we have to be proactive rather than reactive. In the past, if you take, say, and I'm being somewhat late for speaking of regulators.
Sure.
I'm a little late for the FAA. I'm meeting with the FAA.
We don't want to hold you up.
Sorry, but if you take the example of say, seatbelts. Seatbelts were opposed by the auto industry for a very long time, even though the data was very clear that they're safe, that they radically improve deaths and injuries. We don't want to be in that situation where we're fighting regulations, even though there's a safety thing. We can't wait for millions of people to die in auto accidents. And it's important to just elevate the question here. The question is really one of civilizational risk. So it's not like one group versus another, one group of humans versus another. It's like, hey, this is something that's potentially risky for all humans everywhere. very important to understand that.
Is there an equivalent of that?
Do
you think Congress is sufficiently ready to regulate AI?
No, not yet. No, the sequence of events will not be jumping in at the deep end and making rules, but it starts with insight. In fact, this is actually how all of the regulatory bodies have been formed, I believe, is you start with a group formed to create insights, to understand the situation. Then you have proposed rulemaking. You'll get some objections from industry or whatever. And then ultimately you get sort of a consensus on rulemaking. That rulemaking then becomes law or regulation.
What's the difference to an ordinary person?
I saw very little disagreement, actually.
Thank you, Elon. Thank you.
Is AI you don't want to have a case fight with Mark Zuckerberg? Elon Musk leaving Capitol Hill, speaking with our Eamon Javers right there. Excellent questioning, grabbing him on his way out. Had a lot to say. He says that he does believe there will probably be some kind of AI regulation, likely not swift, sort of noting how long the regulatory process can take, but he does believe it will go in the right direction. We're going
to
listen back in.
I think it's the fragility of human civilization. And if you study history, I think you realize that there's a rise and fall to every civilization. Every civilization has a sort of a lifespan. So we want us to last as long as possible.
The ordinary person may not know. Elon Musk is getting in his vehicle and is going ahead and leaving Capitol Hill. Our thanks again to Eamon Javers. That was excellent stuff and some nice questioning to Elon Musk. Mr. Musk also said that all hands were raised when they were asked if they do believe in some form of regulation for AI.
So that was very interesting. And keep Elon Musk in mind, because we'll be talking about him again here coming up and his part in this. But this next video we're going to listen to, listen to one of the senators that came out of this meeting. And this is the date on here. It is September the 13th of last year is when this closed-door meeting with senators took place. And as I said, it was Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, and Bill Gates were among the ones in this meeting. But it's very interesting. It looks like, is it scaremongering? And because the public will then demand or desire these regulatory things, these governmental oversights and laws and everything in order to feel safe and protected from AI. Because we've all seen those Terminator movies. We've seen, going back further, 2001 Space Odyssey, The Twilight Zone, Star Trek, all of these shows had episodes where computers took over and began to slaughter the people. You know, I, Robot, if anyone's seen that movie with Will Smith. So people have seen this stuff, and they're growing concerned about AI, and I'm wondering if this all is a plan so that they'll create the chaos and then restore the order, their kind of order, through these regulations. And now let's listen to this the Senate talk about the meeting that they had.
Executives, giants of the tech industry, are coming forward because they understand the American people are rightly and understandably fearful about what AI could mean to their freedom, economic opportunity. We need to achieve the promise, a lot of promise, but avoid the panoply of perils. And a framework for legislation is a solid start. And the picture today is worth a thousand words of the tech executives,
Senator,
giants in this industry coming forward. And my hope is, again, that they will appear also in open forums like our subcommittee, which will continue to have hearings, and already some of them have been there, like Sam Altman, Brad Smith, IBM was represented, and we're going to move forward. Thank you.
Senator,
against algorithmic discrimination against minorities, against elderly, against poor people. We need a privacy bill of rights for everyone in our country, but especially teenagers who are suffering right now from a mental health crisis that we know is largely related to this existing generation of AI targeting of young people in our country. We didn't get to solutions here, but obviously we can already live with and understand the dangers of today, and we still haven't put those solutions in place. Facial recognition, algorithmic injustice, a privacy bill of rights for all teenagers in our country. That should be the agenda that we move forward and really have the discussions to pass that legislation this year.
Just to let you know, these are just various senators that are coming out of the meeting with these tech CEOs, and they're talking about the laws that they think should be put in place. And so just listen to some of these things, the AI Bill of Rights and Privacy Bill of Rights, and of course they have to throw in the stuff that prevents discrimination and all that stuff. So it's just interesting to listen to the stuff they have in mind. Let's continue.
So far, I think that there was, in my view, a consensus emerging that we need a regulator and probably a new regulator to do the work that has to be done. And that's consistent with my position, which is that we've got to have something like the FDA that was mentioned in there, or like the FCC, that not only can work in an expeditious way, but can do it in a thoughtful way and an informed way. And I think Congress will never do that. And I think there was a view in there that Congress was not going to be able to do it effectively. I wouldn't say that. I'm sure there's a difference of opinion about it, but I think there was a general view that that Washington needed to be involved, partly on behalf of the American people, but also so that we as a nation can set the standard for the rest of the world. That was something that was universally, I think, advocated for in there, even though there were diversity of opinions about lots of other things. That's another reason why Congress has to act, because we have to set the standard for the rest of the world. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. About the risk of AI.
I think that we should be both concerned and excited about the possibility.
Thank you. I do not understand why this meeting is barred, why the press has been barred from this meeting. What most of the people have said is we want innovation, but we've got to protect safety. That's important. Every single person in the room said yes, government has an important role to play. Lindsey Graham and I have a tech bill, and it is a tech bill that would provide some serious regulation over some of the tech giants. It covers issues like privacy as well as AI. Let's sit down and talk about it. Let's put something real on the table instead of everybody agrees that we need safety and innovation. They're sitting at a big round table all by themselves. All of the senators are to sit there and ask no questions. That's the setup. Well, we're sure out there fighting for it. And the American people know we have got to have some changes here. Look, it's the giant tech companies that are the only ones in America who get the special deal, and that is because of Section 230. They are not responsible, can't get sued in court when they cause injury, and at the same time, there's no effective government oversight of them. We need a tech industry bill that actually addresses that head on, that also addresses the monopoly implications, how these giants aren't just big, they are big and they kill competition. And that means they kill innovation in the industry.
Well, we come out of that room exhilarated. This was an amazing and historic experience where we learned so much, where we began our quest to deal with this so important looming issue, AI. We had a diverse group of participants. They talked at each other unvarnished. Everyone learned from everybody else. And so I am really pleased. As some of the people who came out said, it was historic. We got some consensus on some things. First, I asked everyone in the room, is government needed to play a role in regulating AI? And every single person raised their hands, even though they had diverse views. So that gives us a message here that we have to try to act, as difficult as the process may be. Second, it was clear that there needed to be some government help to deal with what we call transformational innovation, the kind of innovation that AI could bring that could do so much good. Bill Gates talked about feeding the hungry. One of the others talked about curing cancer. Some of the people in the room talked about strengthening our national security and defense and feeding the hungry.
I just want to say I'm always nervous when they want to tell us that something is for the public good. I'm just saying, especially the things that have occurred over the last few years that were supposed to be for the public good.
But there was a view. One person said we need a lot of money, $32 billion, into transformational innovation, the kind of stuff that maximizes the benefits of AI. But it was also clear that we needed real help in sustainable innovation. That's minimizing the negatives that AI could emerge from AI, whether it's enshrining bias or the loss of jobs or even the kinds of doomsday scenarios that were mentioned in the room. And only government can be there to put in guardrails. Because even though some of the companies in this room said they were going to try to implement some of these things themselves, and many had joined the voluntary guidelines that the White House issued, it's clear that there will be rogue companies and other companies that will not go along on their own, and that will bring down everybody. They'll go seek a lowest common denominator. So it is 100% clear that we also need maybe even more government innovation in coming up with sustainable guidelines, which means the government putting guardrails in place to deal with issues like bias and worker education and jobs and even some of the more doomsday scenarios that were presented. And finally, I think there was a consensus we need to figure out a way to balance the two. If you don't want one to too much get in the way of the other. You want to be able to maximize the benefits and minimize the harms. And that will be our difficult job. It was great. Over 60 senators came, which showed the interest. You don't usually get 60 senators to come and spend a lot of time at an event like this. And the senators, one of the best things about this is a vast majority of the Senate learned, we walked out of that room knowing a lot more about how we deal with AI than when they walked in.
Elon Musk just told me outside that he does not believe that Congress is ready to regulate AI. You say you're exhilarated. What's your response to what he just said?
Well, first, in the room, he said it was a tremendous hearing and a giant step forward. And second, look, it's a big challenge. This is the hardest thing that I think we have ever undertaken. But we can't be like ostriches and put our head in the sand, because if we don't step forward, things will be a lot worse.
AI is not going away. It's going to be here for a long, long time. The challenge that we have is, will we try to catch up on, first of all, the development of it here in the United States? Can we stay ahead of the rest of the world? Can we lead the rest of the world? And second of all, can we do it in such a fashion that our people truly benefit? And that means not just benefiting in terms of new jobs and opportunities, but in terms of quality of life for the next generation. Can we actually cure cancer? I think we can. Can we create new opportunities for young people? And literally, can we bring other people in here with marvelous talents and actually have them participate in artificial intelligence types of jobs in the future in such a fashion that everybody else benefits? These folks that came in here, the people that are on this panel with us, they spoke very frankly about what the opportunities were, and they were very frank about the challenges as well. This is the first of a series that we're going to be doing. We're going to continue it this afternoon And hopefully it's a step forward in terms of us doing the right things to provide the right balance between incentives to keep AI development here in the United States and also the amount of appropriate regulatory oversight so that everybody sees a fair playing field and the privacy and the rights, the transparency that our citizens demand is achieved.
I am very humble.
Okay. So that's that video where they're discussing the government oversight. And, I mean, they're talking about all these things, but aren't there already laws and regulations and all these things that determine how to do business and privacy and those kinds of things? But here they go with even more and more things, bigger and bigger government, and like I just mentioned earlier, they just introduced the bill. It just passed the House about banning TikTok because of national security concerns. So maybe this is one of the first of many of these type of bills. They're not sure what it's going to do in the Senate yet, but we'll see. So this next video happened it was posted about a month after these Senate hearing videos that talks about how President Biden actually signed an executive order to regulate artificial intelligence. So let's listen to this.
In a landmark move, U.S. President Joe Biden has signed an executive order for America to lead the way in managing the risk of artificial intelligence. The order establishes new standards for AI safety and security, advances equity and civil rights, stand up for consumers and workers, and promotes innovation and competition.
One thing is clear. To realize the promise of AI and avoid the risk, we need to govern this technology, there's no other way around it, in my view. It must be governed.
The order requires developers of AI systems that pose risks to U.S. national security, the economy, public health, or safety to share the results of safety tests with the U.S. government before they release to the public. It also directs agencies to set standards for testing materials with chemicals, biological, radiological, nuclear, and cybersecurity risks. The order also requires that cloud service providers report foreign customers to the U.S. government. It also recommends the watermarking of photos, videos, and audio developed by AI tools to track down the origin of online content to fight deepfakes and manipulated images. There's a political angle as well, with Biden acknowledging that another element of his strategy is to slow China's advances in the field. The executive order builds on previous actions President Biden has taken, including work that led to voluntary commitments from 15 leading companies to drive safe, secure, and trustworthy development of AI. Already, Europe is moving ahead with rules of its own.
This executive order will use the same authority to make companies prove that their most powerful systems are safe before allowing them to be used. That means companies must tell the government about the large-scale AI systems they're developing and share rigorous independent test results to prove they pose no national security or safety risk to the American people.
The tech industry, which usually opposes any kind of regulation, is for a change in favor of guardrails here. The chief executives of Microsoft, Google, OpenAI, and another AI startup, Anthropic, met with the U.S. government earlier this year, and in July, they and three other companies voluntarily committed to safety and security testing of their systems. Bureau Report, Business Today Television.
Okay, so that's the first report about the executive order, and got one more video we'll listen to concerning this regulation. And note that one of the things it talked about was national security, and as I stated, here they are ready to ban TikTok in America if China, if the company who owns it doesn't divest from the parent company, which is Chinese owned, and they have some concerns about our information, China having access to that through this app. But I mean, that was a concern that I'd been hearing about, and some of you have probably heard they've been talking about this for at least a few years when TikTok first started to get really popular, and they let it go, and now here they are trying to reach back on it. But I think those regulations are going to have more implications than just TikTok, but that's just my thought on it. But here's the second video.
An order aimed at regulating artificial intelligence, and it's going to set some new security and privacy protections, such as creating watermarking standards for AI-generated content. Joining us right now, though, to talk about all of this is Chris Krebs. He's the former Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Director, now Krebs Stamos Group Partner. Good morning to you. You saw what the administration laid out yesterday. There's been a lot of, let's say, public discussion for the last several months about the need to regulate this, but at least in the private discussions I had yesterday with folks in this space, there was a sort of an undercurrent of, oh my goodness, is all this going to go too far now? Are we going to be getting subpoenas and requests for all sorts of information that we didn't anticipate or expect, and that this is going to slow things down? Did you have the same conversations I did yesterday?
I had some, and there was a little bit of, hey, this is really happening, particularly when you think about the fact that ChatGPT's first version wasn't publicly released until about 11 months ago. So this has all happened quite fast. The executive order itself, in terms of the requirements and some of the demands that may be coming to companies, I still think they're a bit far off. When you look at some of the reporting requirements under the Defense Production Act, that's really the heaviest or weightiest part of the EO, it applies to models that practically don't exist yet. And so it really is about future frontier models, and everything that's in existence right now has, you know, much, much less rigorous requirements.
Well, the Defense Production Act piece seemed to be the most extensive, or at least would give the government access to things that it might not be able to access in almost any other context. So what's the important takeaway there?
You know, I was a little taken aback by the DPA requirement. The DPA, the Defense Production Act, it applies to national security, to what the Pentagon can access when and where, but also Homeland Security and FEMA. You tend to see it in hurricanes and ramp up for military action. And I think that's a bit of the risk right now, is that you could see some challenges under the DPA when, frankly, we need it most, when what you're seeing in Ukraine, in the Middle East, and potentially in the buildup for the China invasion of Taiwan. It's a risky time. But nonetheless, I do think that it was a fairly surgical use of the DPA rather than some of the other tools that the administration.
What do you think the greatest risk in terms of AI is right this minute, meaning the generative AI and how it's being used? Is it in the context of what we're seeing in the Israel-Hamas war and how social media, things that were being pushed? Is it something else? What's your concern?
Well, the EO actually calls it out. So to your point about some of the labeling of AI-generated content and the lack of discernment and ability to tell what's real and what's not, that's obviously a concern of the administration. I'm not sure that their requirement's going to work because bad guys don't play by the rules anyway. The second is, if you look at the model weights that they call out, that for the DPA, the Defense Production Act requirements, they specifically talk about biological sequencing data. And so they are worried about biological weapons being able to be generated using some of these future tools. And I think that's probably the nearest shark to the boat in terms of the most significant risks in AI right now.
Chris, I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole of how AI and generative AI language models work, but waiting, you just used the phrase waiting, and one of the things I think the audience, if they don't know already, should understand is that when these models are built, one of the most critical components is how certain data points and certain things that it's reading are weighted, if you will, in terms of what's considered more important than other things, and that's what makes one model different than another model. Those are considered, those weighting, those sort of weighting indexes, if you will, are considered some of the most important, if not competitive, components of these models, meaning how OpenAI weights things compared to how, you know, Google weights things, compared to how Meta weights things. That's a very important sort of competitive component. What is the risk to the various companies that those sort of weighting issues become public in some way?
Once you get past the compute power and the networking speed, it's the weights that are the entire ball game. And so the executive order requires red teaming, which is just a security phrasing for checking on the security of the systems around those weights to ensure that they can't leak out. Because if they do leak out, you know, once something's on the internet, it's on the internet forever. And we've got to protect those weights, because if they do get into the wrong hands, that's going to be a significant capability in those that we may not trust with that information.
Okay, so those are the reports on the AI executive orders and various concerns. It seemed like the focus of this particular report was more about national security and defense and things like that. So this is going to get a lot more complicated, but as we said, order out of chaos. This is how they do create the problem, incite a reaction to the problem, and then they come with their solution to the problem, which is more tighter regulations, tighter governance, and there's ways that these laws can be used in ways that they may have not have been intended when they were first put in place. But then again, a lot of these bills and things that go through Congress and are put in law, they have so much stuff in it. They may call it the AI Protection Act or something like that, but it'll have a whole bunch of other things in it that people didn't know was there. And then when they begin to implement it, that's when you figure it out. So that's the stuff that I try to keep in mind when I'm looking at some of this. They don't have a lot of credibility, as far as I'm concerned, to trust them to be acting for the public good. So what I'm going to do now next video is from a pastor who is also someone in the tech industry for a long time, and I wanted to look at some of this AI stuff. And the part in his video is titled "Artificial Intelligence is at the Center of the New World Order," but he does have some good information in here about how, somewhat unbeknownst to us, particularly years ago, how enmeshed we are with AI, how the different aspects of society that it's just entrenched in, and it seems as though we're kind of stuck with it whether we like it or not. But I thought some of the stuff he talked about is interesting as far as how it's in every aspect of our lives, even right now. So let's give a listen.
Get into this one. The topic for today is going to be artificial intelligence. Now, I got to tell you what inspired this video. What inspired this video is a conversation that I've been having that's kind of been long-term, and portions of this conversation has been very interesting in that I talk to a lot of people about how deep AI is diving into our world today, especially as we are rapidly approaching the world of Revelation 13, the world of the Antichrist. But some people say, James, I'm just not a part of that. I don't have anything to do with it. I'm not in the middle of it. One of the things that kind of inspired me to bring this up is to say that literally, and this is no joke, if you are alive and walking on the ground in the United States of America, in most places, whether they be heavily populated places or in some cases remotely populated places, you are interacting with artificial intelligence in one way or another. And I am going to go over at least 13 or maybe even 14 areas where this is happening. We're going to have a conversation about this. And then later on, I'm actually going to get in depth into these areas. Maybe a few videos from now, we're going to get into some of the areas where it's really affecting it. And I think some of this stuff is just going to absolutely blow your mind. So we have to start with Revelation 13. So let's get into that really quickly. Revelation 13 will start in verse 11, and we are talking about three primary characters here. We are talking about two beasts, okay? One of them is the Antichrist. The other beast represents the false prophet, and the other beast, or the dragon, the third character, which is not a beast, the dragon represents Satan. So this is really important to understand this, because as we read this through, it's going to make a lot of sense, and I want everybody to understand where we get this idea of 666 from, and where the mark of the beast comes from, and the Antichrist, all those things. I'm going to read that passage to you right now. We're going to get into that, and then we're going to have a discussion about this and how it relates to AI. Now, again, this stuff is super critical, okay? This is super critically important, and we have to, if we're going to do any of this justice, we have to be able to spend even a little bit of time talking about the different issues related to this subject and why it becomes important to us. Now, I do want to say this, okay? We are we're not going to be on the earth when a lot of this happens, okay? We know that, okay? We're fully aware of that, okay? But we also...
There are some out there who do not agree with the pre-trib rapture point of view, which is what he's talking about, but that's not what I wanted to highlight here, but just to let you know that's what he's talking about. But I mainly liked a lot of the information that he has in here.
So, that we are facing the type of world that we know the final Antichrist is going to be well in our midst, and he is going to do a lot of things that are crazy. Again, we won't be here, but the world is changing rapidly, and we're quickly moving in that direction, which means we're going to be raptured soon. So let me just read some of this to you, and then we'll move forward and we'll have a conversation about what all of this means, okay? Revelation chapter 13, it starts in verse 11. It says, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon, or spoke as a dragon, which basically means that he is going to be a spiritual leader. He is going to be very approachable because he is going to appear to have the kind of power that comes from being likable, but yet he's going to talk like Satan. That's kind of what it's talking about here, okay? Verse 12, and he exercises all power of the first beast before him and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by sword and did live. Now, this is all very important stuff to be talking about because this is a guy who's going to have an immense amount of power. And folks, when I talk about an immense amount of power, I am talking about an immense amount of power. I mean, this guy is going to have the ability to be able to do all kinds of signs and wonders and is going to actually give credibility to the Antichrist that nobody would seem to want to worship but will because of this spiritual leader. And it's interesting because the fact that this Antichrist gets a wound by the sword in his head and he actually lives and he survives is going to be one of the signs and wonders that's actually utilized here. And I do a lot of talking about this. I would recommend that you go to the Calvary Chapel Signal Hill Live YouTube page or go to jamescadiz.com. Better yet, go to jamescadiz.com. And pull the Bible study that I did on this, Revelation chapter 13, verses 11, all the way through the end, which is verse 18. Very important. I get into a very extensive conversation about what this false prophet is going to do and, of course, what the Antichrist is going to do. So look what it goes on to say. It says in verse 15, and he had power to give unto the image of the beast that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So what we know is that we are going to be facing a world where the final Antichrist is going to set himself up in the temple. We know this based on what Daniel tells us, the abomination that causes desolate. He is going to set himself up in the temple. He is going to demand to be worshipped. And when that basically happens, he is going to require an allegiance of that worship, or a sign of that allegiance. And that sign of that allegiance is going to be a mark, whether it be on the forehead or whether it be on the right hand. And it actually is the mark of the beast, which is in essence 666. Now, here's the question. It's the one we've always asked, and that is, how in the world is he going to enforce whether or not people can buy anything if the idea is that we have cash and we can do anything we want with that cash? Well, the obvious answer is you've got to go to a cashless society. But then we knew this really quickly with the advent of credit cards, and when we started learning different methods of payment that have nothing to do with cash, we realized that that isn't enough, because with cash or items that are electronic that still have the same kind of lack of controls as cash, you can still develop an underground market for all of these things and go virtually undetected, especially with the amounts of fraud and the things that are happening with that. So now they're taking it to a new step. They're going to central banking digital currencies, and with those central banking digital currencies, they are using AI to actually manage the way banks interact with people. And guys, I don't know if you know this, but there's some interesting news articles that have come up regarding this very issue, and perhaps one of the most significant of those articles that we have actually seen centers around what Jamie Dimon is actually doing, and the fact that he is now cutting a ton of jobs. Like, this is something that a lot of people didn't even know, but he is cutting a ton of jobs because what he's doing in essence is he is actually using artificial intelligence to take the response, or to take the place of all of these people that are working in banking function, which, by the way, I just want you to know, many, many times you might not realize this. If you've called your bank and you've spoken to somebody, it's very likely that, well, who you've spoken to is actually artificial intelligence. And when you start talking about artificial intelligence in the banking system, you are bringing yourself into a mindset that people, listen, I'm telling you, people do not understand this, but you're bringing yourself into a mindset where everything that happens when you interact with that artificial intelligence is actually tracking your activity. So if you go to the bank and you say, I need you to expand my limit on this, or I'm wondering what would it cost if I got this loan. There's all kinds of things like that that are out there, and the AI studies you, it tracks you, and it reports things, and then it creates a larger economy around those things. And it's just really important to think about that. Like, here's a great example, right? They're using AI right now in banking to be able to study your buying patterns. So they know how often you go to restaurants. They know what you buy in the morning. They know what type of coffee you want. They go through and they begin to buy, or they begin to record all of these different types of things that you're beginning to see, and then they know the type of things you're prone to doing. So if you're a person that likes coffee in the morning, then if you're a coffee company, you can pay your phone service, whoever it might be, a whole bunch of money to put an ad in front of you for your product. So if you're near a coffee company and you're, or a coffee house or something like that, and you're on your way to work to go get your coffee, your phone will pop up and go, hey, try this. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, or maybe there's a conversation that, that is had. Sometimes it's not even a conversation. Sometimes it's you simply spending money on something that relates to a project that you might be on, and all of a sudden you begin to see the other pieces of that project show up. All of that is AI, and all of that's what's happening, and it starts at the bank. And by the
way, I just wanted to say, and that's definitely what happens a lot of times, how they're tracking us. And Yuval Harari, we may play the clip a little bit later, he talked about humans being hackable animals, as he described it, where they can and the idea of it is that you have so much data on us that they've collected from various things that he, some of which he's talking about here, and so they know more about you than you know about yourself is another way that, thing that he said, so that they could use that to manipulate you. Right now, it's just maybe about buying things and putting stuff, advertisements and all that kind of stuff, but we know. Especially when you study Revelation and other prophetic books that talk about the end times and the Lord himself even discussing the deceptions and all of these things that will be put in place to cause us to or worship the image of the because all some people to take that mark. So it's a practicing or grooming for manipulation of some sort, because people are just accustomed to it now. That we know we're being tracked. We know we see these things pop up. We know that it's probably some AI that put this in front of us. It's kind of weird how it happens sometimes, but you're almost getting desensitized to it. But as the Bible cautions us, we need to be sober and vigilant. Because our adversary, the devil, walks about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So we cannot relax when it comes down to this stuff.
If you don't think this is the case, let me turn you on to a video that I have played for you a bunch of times. And folks, when I say I've played this a bunch of times, I've worn out how many times I've played this. But this video is very relevant, and the reason why this video is relevant is because you're looking at a central banker who is talking about the importance of central banking digital currency.
Our democracy depends on you.
Funny how they sneak these commercials in. But so we'll get back to the video here in a minute. But I just wanted to say, again, we just have to be discerning in these last days, because the Lord warned us. First thing he said, beware that no one deceive you.
I'm going to let you listen to him all 45 seconds without being interrupted. Listen to what he has to say, because what he has to say here is very, very viable to the conversation that we're having. Very pertinent. Listen to what he says.
Now, in all our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash, and there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability, and also we will have the technology to enforce that.
So that's kind of a scary thing, okay? If you look at what he's actually saying, he's saying that in essence what they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to track the money, where it's going, where it's coming from, all of these types of things, and they're going to be able to enforce how you actually spend things. And if you think, well, James, come on, that's really...
I just wanted to say really quick, when it comes down to the central bank digital currency, I'm thinking at least 2 years, about 2 years ago, somewhere around in there, President Biden did issue an executive order or of some type in order to have the Fed come up with a digital currency for the U.S. So this is already in, they're already working on something, and he put the order out a couple of years ago.
A big deal. Well, CBDCs right now are alive and well in our banking system. We see them everywhere, and actually all over the country they're being used. As a matter of fact, it is, in essence, the mechanism that is being utilized, and I want to make myself very, very clear, it's being utilized every day on a regular basis to communicate with banks on the back end. As a matter of fact, when you had Silicon Valley Bank fall apart, remember, the falling apart of Silicon Valley Bank was not even felt by a lot of people because the depositors' funds were actually covered through the use of FDIC stepping in, and by doing so, they utilized the infrastructure created by the CBDC world and how AI moves that information into the pockets of these depositors. There was no bank run. They saved a major problem from happening, and there is – look, guys, there's stuff like this that is happening all day, every day we're watching it happen. And by the way, I think it's really important to note this, okay? J.P. Morgan, this is J.P. Morgan Chase. They have AI-driven management software that now, and this is a story that broke 2 days ago, that now has slashed manual work by nearly 90%, folks. 90%. Now, why is that a big deal? Some people think the obvious reason. Well, it just saves a little bit of time and energy and money because now it, you're automating something that somebody can do, and it makes it a lot easier, but it does more than that. It also records the activity that these engines, these AI bots are doing, and it now knows so much more about you. Because the more is being tracked by AI, the more is being stored about your activity, and the more they're able to understand what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. It will come to a point in time where you will not be able to buy or sell unless you meet the conditions set forth by the bank, which, by the way, will be conditions that will be set forth by the rulers, which, of course, will be the conditions that will eventually be set forth by the Antichrist. And that's such an important aspect of what we're talking about. Now, there's AI also, there's AI in cars. People think, oh, well, I don't have a Tesla, so I'm not really interacting with AI. Well, actually, if you have a car that is anything newer than about 2000, you're interacting with AI. As a matter of fact, I'll go as far as to say if you have anything that goes back to 1997, if you have anything with OnStar in it, you have some level of AI being deployed in your vehicle. Even with the software updates, the type of things that are going on, AI just doesn't drive vehicles. AI controls efficiency on the road. AI, there are so many things that AI does. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of cities right now that have adapted the type of transmitters that detect the signals that are being transmitted from cars like Teslas to be able to know what's coming down an intersection and when to open up an intersection versus when to close it. So governments now can even control the direction you're traveling in. They can stop you on a dime. They can shut your car down. Any vehicle that's been built running in the United States of America since 2001 actually has the ability to be shut down technically through the use of satellite technology. So AI, it's in cars. By the way, AI has been in the manufacturing of cars for the better part of 25 years. We're seeing it again and again and again. Now, I don't need to say anything about phones. AI in phones is just alarming, right? Your phone utilizes AI to do virtually everything that you can think about that you do with your phone. You ever wondered, like, if you started doing the type of activity tracking, like just for basic things, your calories, your health, all of these things. These watches have sensors that know your heartbeat. They take all of that information, your oxygenation levels. They bring all of that to the phone. That interacts with AI tools that are being controlled from supercomputers that are online in the cloud versus actual little things in the programming on your phone. It does all that stuff and is able to make assessments as into the condition of your health.
I just wanted to add, and he's talking about the phone right now, but they also have the some rings, a ring that you put on your finger called Aura. And I think it costs about close to $400 now, but, you know, they're probably going to try to make that cheaper and more accessible to the poor. You know, can't have us not being able to have access to this technology for our own good, of course. But, yeah, they've got wearable, all kinds of wearable technology that works through an app on your phone or implants they put in you, but I think he's going to get to that.
Does your heart beat irregularly? What's your breathing pattern like when you are not resting? I can measure my heart rate right now. I can measure my oxygenation, my pulse ox. All of those things that you can do, all those nifty things that you can do with your phone and with your watch, all are things that are functions of AI. They're recorded. They're saved. Your camera, by the way, is one of the most powerful data collecting tools by these companies because they utilize your camera to be able to make decisions on what you're going to eat next and what to sell to you. You can go in a store. There are some cameras. You go into a store, there are some phones that are able to detect your activity in a store. If you walk in an Amazon store, I promise you, your phone is one of the greatest and most powerful technology tools out there to do the type of things that we're actually talking about. And by the way, if you're on social networks, which is another way that AI is interacting with you, right? We've talked about banks. We've talked about cars. We've talked about phones. We talk about social networks. Guys, they know everything. They absolutely know what you're doing. They're gathering pictures from interactions you're having with family members and relatives and friends. And all of these things are things that are actually being all put together and real data is being collected. Let me give you an example of how this works in the real world, okay? If you go to your phone and you tell your phone, I need directions to go to, you know, Auntie Barbara's house, okay? I'm just making up a name. And you live 40 miles away. And you tell your phone, I need to go there right now. Your phone will give you a dead accurate estimate as to how long it's going to take. How do they know that? How does your phone recognize how well or how fast you're going to get there and get it right down to literally a 30-second estimate? Well, it's really simple. There are hundreds and thousands, if not millions of phones that are on the same road that you're about to go on. And all of that data is gathered by the phone companies through satellites and other means. They know how fast those phones are traveling. They know the altitude that those, or the elevation that those phones are at. They know the humidity levels. They know what's going on with the weather. They know all of that information because those phones are collecting that information, and your phone will even know whether or not you're going to be in the carpool lane. It is able to detect how many voices are in your vehicle. It knows if your dog is in your vehicle and whether or not that dog is a human or not. You know, oh, that's a dog, so he's not going to be in the carpool lane. Or actually, there's a dog and another human's voice. They're going to be in the carpool lane likely. We're going to adjust the time estimate for how long it's going to take. Some of these phones have the abilities to determine whether or not there's a transmitter in the vehicle or a transponder that's actually being used for all of these, you know, road fees that you pay, whether it be the toll roads, that type of thing. You guys, it's everywhere, and that's how you know. And as a matter of fact, all of the predictive analysis that's being done, all of the ads that you're being sold, all of the things that you're seeing in social media, on websites, the pop-ups that you see, all of those things are based on data that they collect concerning the movies you watch, the music you listen to, the websites you go to, the conversations you're having. It's really funny how that works. There are people that tell me on a regular basis, they go to church, they hear a Bible study, and it's crazy how somebody then will go home, and as they're going home, they'll see an ad pop up on their phone that has an advertisement for a commentary on the book of Revelation that I'm teaching through, right? How do they know that? How do they know I'm studying the book of Revelation? How would they even know that I'm interested in a commentary? This happened recently where I made a recommendation on a particular document, right, a particular book that somebody could buy, like a reference book. And one of the people going home actually got a shopping site that popped up, I think it was Amazon, that said, we've got this book you're looking for. How did you know? Right? That's all.
10 seconds.
That's all AI. All of that is AI, you guys. Every last bit of that, right? AI is involved in healthcare. That's a really scary one, right? AI is involved in how you book your appointments for healthcare. AI is involved in the medicine you take. AI is involved in the, yes, dare I say, some of the medical treatments, right?
And just on the visual, when he said the medical treatment part of it, he made a motion like a needle going into your arm, but I was just going to say about the technology and AI in medical care. I know someone that does home health care, and they went with a patient to one of their medical appointments one time, and they talked about how they didn't actually see the doctor. Now, this might have been during the COVID lockdowns were going on, but she said that instead of seeing the doctor, they were at the doctor's office, but instead a robot came, you know, rolled into the room with a TV screen on it, and the doctor was on the screen on the robot, and that's how he interacted with his patient, was to talk to him through the screen. So I thought that was interesting. It's getting very hands-off when it comes down to medical care because of this technology.
AI is involved in a lot of different things. AI is used in the healthcare industry to gather information about the type of things that you do, your drinking habits, your eating habits, all the health info that's logged on your phone. Those are all used by these companies. If you're somebody that's a diabetic, for example, and you've got a scanner that's on your arm that scans your blood on a regular basis, or you have a machine where you're poking yourself and it's recording your blood, those things synchronize with your phone, with the app. That app synchronizes with the web. The web synchronizes with your doctor who paid for the scanner for you to have or to pay for the sensor that you have, and they know everything that's going on. They're able to interact with it. That's how AI is being touched in healthcare. How about this? Text edits. Did you know that? When you go to Siri and you say, Siri, type this, or you're driving and you can't type, so you use the voice recognition to type something. Or let's say you hold the voice command button and you ask your phone to give you directions to a place or dial this number. Do you know that every single time you say something like that, they are recording your voice? They're recording the things that you say. They record the tone. They record the speed that you're traveling at the time that you're actually making the request for the direction.
I just wanted to say about all this recording of your voice and your image and likeness, probably when you're out and you got all the cameras around. When they talk about deep fakes and fake pictures and videos and recordings, and you wonder how this technology can be used to create false charges against you, perhaps, in order to take you and put you in jail and all these kinds of things that can be done. And how do you dispute it? It's your voice. That's you, isn't it, in the video? How can you dispute it now with all these deep fakes that they have? And, of course, the real criminals will be able to use that as a defense. Well, that could be a fake. So it's just how this technology can be used in nefarious ways.
They record the location that you're in. They want to know how close do you get to your destination before you ask for help on a map. All of that information gives them better data for them to be able to exploit you in different ways, and that is literally the way it goes. And, folks, I'm not exaggerating. This is the world that we live in. This is what happens with AI. And by the way, going back to healthcare for just one second, we have already seen what's been happening with healthcare in the world of Elon Musk. And what has he been doing now? Now they have brain chips that they've implanted. And, folks, these brain chips are crazy. Like, I had to show you what they're doing in that world, right? But text edits, that's a really interesting one, right? Because when you start getting into text edits, like I said before, it records everything. You tell it to type something, it happens, right? The other thing is things like facial detection, right? Or how about just simply walking into a store? Do you know now, if you walk into a grocery store, AI is involved on so many levels, it's not even funny. Let me show you a picture of an AI-based model that's being used now. It's been used for probably the better part of 8 years, okay? No joke. Watch this commercial. This is an Amazon commercial. Watch this. Look at how they're doing it. Now, it used to be you had a watch. You can scan the watch. It used to be, you know, you had a credit card or something like that. Now, there's none of that. Now, they scan the palm of your hand. No joke, folks. They scan the palm of your hand. By the way, here in the Long Beach area, they already have stores that have this technology in it. They've had this technology in it for years. Okay? Watch this. This is, by the way, very, very interesting. Keep your eye out for this. Watch this.
This is Zoe. Just like you, she uses lots of different cards and IDs to get through her day. What if all Zoe needed was herself? Introducing Amazon One, a free service that lets you use your palm to quickly pay for things, gain access, earn rewards, and more. let's say you're grabbing your favorite coffee beverage, or heading into the office, or checking out. Just hover your palm and you're on your way. It's as easy as that. Sign up is free and takes less than a minute. All you need is a credit card, your phone number, and your palm. That's it. Since your palm is unique and can't be lost or misplaced, you can get things done quickly and securely. And with more experiences on the way, Amazon One will help you get even more done, simply by being you. Now, Zoe has more time to do what she loves, indoor skydiving. Enter, identify, and pay with Amazon One.
And by the way, what's really crazy about this is Amazon is willing to make all of this technology available to free, to make this technology available for free to any business that wants to adapt the technology. And I'm not kidding. This is something that they're very serious about. Why they want to get these devices in every single one of these stores. Why? Because the value that they get is far greater than any capital outlay they're going to spend in getting these scanners there. Let's say a scanner costs them $10,000. They'll make hundreds of thousands of dollars for every $10,000 scanner that goes in there. Folks, I'm not kidding you. This is the kind of stuff that they're doing, and when they go out and they deploy this type of stuff, it's bringing to them the type of data that is just like mind-boggling to people, right? They're able to know the store that's here in my area, which, to be honest, to this day I've never walked into. You walk into that store, you can take something off the shelf, and it knows it was you that took it. You literally take whatever you want, you walk up to that scanner, put your palm on there, and you're good to go. That is literally the type of technology that's being deployed here, and it's very effective and it's very powerful, and they're doing this kind of stuff again and again and again. And by the way, if you wonder, well, okay, what if I choose not to do any of that? Well, they're going to learn. Look, they are going to make you comply. And again, AI is doing all of this. AI reports this data back to them. AI is watching over this. Watch this. And I've played this again many, many times. I've played this video again. This is the he was the old CEO of Pfizer, but look at what the CEO of Pfizer says about a new technology that they've deployed. This is many, many years ago. This is at the World Economic Forum, I want to say something like 8 or 9 years ago, maybe even longer than that. But look at what he says. It's striking. It should cause you to be deeply concerned. But look at what he says. And I want you to focus on one very specific keyword that he uses. It's going to be important that you pay attention to this, you know, right? Tune into this. Okay, here we go.
Basically biological chip that it is in the tablet. And once you take the tablet and dissolves into your stomach, it sends a signal that you took the tablet. So imagine the applications of that, compliance, the insurance companies to know that the medicines that patients should take, they do.
You get that? He says one of the primary characteristics, he's saying it's compliance. It's making sure that, you know, and he wants it to sound good. Oh, well, the hospitals are very concerned about their patients and want to make sure they take the medication that they're supposed to be taking. What if the medication that the hospital wants them to be taking is the medication that the government wants them to be taking, right? What if it's something like that? What if that's the issue that's going on? What happens if that's the case, right? I mean, you have to think about how crazy this can actually get. And folks, they're working very, 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 very hard to do this. They're talking about hacking human beings, right? They're talking about human beings being hackable, and they're talking about doing it through AI. Like, guys, I'm not kidding you. The kind of stuff right now, the kind of discussions that they're having regarding the AI subject is mind-boggling. Here's someone we always try to play him every now and again because the nonsense that he says is so unbelievably blasphemous. But it creates the same kind of point that we've been talking about, and the point is significant, right? This is Yuval Harari talking about upgrading ourselves. And talk about the spirit of Antichrist. Like, if you really want to understand what the spirit of Antichrist looks like, listen to what he says here. And what he says here is demonic. It's remarkably, it's just absolutely crazy. Take a listen to what Yuval Harari says about this.
That the next big project of humankind will be to overcome old age and death, to find the key, the secret to happiness, and to basically upgrade humans into gods. This is why the title Homo Deus, God-man. And I don't mean it as a kind of literary metaphor. I mean it in the literal sense that for thousands of years, humans have imagined gods in a particular way. They ascribed particular abilities and qualities to gods. And we are here in a church, and the walls are full of these descriptions of what God can do. And we are now seriously in the business of acquiring these traditional divine abilities and qualities to ourselves. So all these animals, all these plants, God created them, and they are all organic. Now humans are trying to do better than that. We will not just gain the ability to create these organic beings that's been around for 4 billion years, we are in the process of learning how to create the first inorganic entities, inorganic beings, like artificial intelligence, that ever existed. So in this sense, it's...
Hi, I'm Tom Bree.
I want to know, how is it that he thinks that something that is not real, that's at best a cheap knockoff of the real thing, artificial, that's what artificial is, how he thinks that's better than what God has done and what he created?
Literal claim that humans are trying to upgrade themselves into gods.
So humans are trying to upgrade themselves into gods, and this is a guy that really believes this nonsense. And the thing that's really crazy about this is he says that it's going to be better. Now, this is part of the lie of the devil, and we've talked about this, right? Artificial intelligence is never going to be smarter or better than what he's referring to or minimizing as simply organic. That is such a beyond absurd assertion, right? And we know that. This isn't like something that should be strange to us. It isn't something that should surprise us. These are the types of things that should be very, very obvious to us. The problem here, and this is the part where it gets really, really ugly, is that let me just say this. The spirit of Antichrist means instead of Christ. So the enemy is trying to remove mankind's collective consciousness by God by convincing them that they themselves can replace God. So this is the problem that we're facing right now, folks. This is the issue. And so AI is affecting so much of this, right? If you want to talk about things like even your smart home, if you have Alexa in your home, Google knows everything you do in your house, everything. There is nothing that you do in your house that Google does not know about. Google knows when you're having conversations with your children. Google knows what you're telling your children. Google knows when you spank your children. If you have Alexa in your house, you have AI running your house, right? Hey, guys, I'm telling you, there are so many aspects of this. YouTube itself, we talk about YouTube and the YouTube algorithm. Do you understand that YouTube's algorithm actually is 500 different types of AI engines? Not joking, right? Because Google spends a lot of time in wanting to understand what people want to watch, and then it takes that data based on their watching patterns and provides for people what they want to watch. By the way, that has become a tremendous blessing for people like me because I can more effectively communicate the message of the gospel by getting it out to a larger and wider audience. And, of course, the responsibility that I have is to rely upon the Holy Spirit and not AI. But there are lots of tools that are out there that give us the ability to be able to communicate more effectively. AI is being used in language translation. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, you can actually translate into other languages very powerful concepts and principles, truthful biblical principles, using the tool of AI translating from English to Tagalog, for example, or English to Japanese, or English to whatever. But it's also being used in very nefarious ways, right? Ways that are beginning to usher in the New World Order. And that's the goal. You guys, listen, everybody is talking about New World Order, even the President of the United States. I'll show you a video. And we've talked about this before. I've aired this video for you before, right? But what's interesting about this video is the fact that this is the President of the United States disclosing to you. He actually told you in a speech, I was in a secure meeting. He's talking about the contents of a classified discussion he's having with his leaders. In that meeting, he's talking about acceptable casualties, acceptable life laws. And in that, he's bringing in the context of the new world order, the liberal order, world order. Listen to this. Listen how crazy this is.
You know, we are at an inflection point, I believe, in the world economy, not just the world economy, in the world. It occurs every three or four generations. As one of the top military people said to me in a secure meeting the other day, 60 million people died between 1900 and 1946. And since then, we established a liberal world order, and that hadn't happened in a long while. A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is the time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it, and we've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it. So anyway.
Isn't that amazing? And these are the types of things that these guys, they have absolutely no problem saying any of this. Like this. This type of thing that I'm talking about here, guys, is not unusual to these individuals that continue to talk about this. And they are moving in that general direction. I mean, I've played the videos of, Prince Charles literally, in essence, talking about the Antichrist, right? Look at how they're seeking to even get inside the human body, to get inside the human mind. Look at the technology that they're deploying. Here's another one. This is a super old one. Guys, I'm going to play this for you. This is really, really old technology, but it's been deployed for a long time, and it's being utilized everywhere, and AI is at the helm of this. AI, the information that they're gathering here, you guys, is actually being augmented by artificial.
One of the biggest...
This is really, really old technology, but it's been deployed for a long time, and it's being utilized everywhere, and AI is at the helm of this. AI, the information that they're gathering here, you guys, is actually being augmented by artificial intelligence, and they're gathering all kinds of info that will just absolutely shock you. It's the kind of stuff that will absolutely blow your mind. Watch this.
Enough with illegal aliens getting free housing and prepaid cars.
This is amazing. Watch this.
And that has the effect of increasing the dispersal distance from the tree. And that's the name of the game, is spreading the seeds as far as possible.
So you're looking at an example from nature. You're watching, basically tree leaves fall. But what you're about to see are not tree leaves. Watch this. This is scary. For those of you that sometimes have a difficult time looking at smaller printing, it says, inspired by nature, a team of engineers at Northwestern University have developed the first flying microchip. Microchip, folks. First flying microchip. You breathe it in, it enters your system. Guys, the implications of this are outrageous. Watch this. The microflyer is the smallest ever human-made flying structure.
The goal of this project has been to add capability for winged flight to electronic circuit chips, with the idea that those capabilities would allow us to distribute highly functional but miniaturized
Look at how small that is, folks. Look at how small that chip is. The little shine of gold that you see, it's one chip. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 flying objects.
And it looks like what glitter would look like if it's on your hand. It's very small.
On that little tiny portion of his finger, those 5 flying objects, you wouldn't be able to see it. Most people wouldn't be able to see it to save their life. No joke. Let me rewind this a little bit so you can see it again, okay? This is unbelievable. Watch this.
With the idea that those capabilities would allow us to distribute highly functional but miniaturized electronic devices that could sense the environment for disease tracking, population surveillance, maybe monitoring of environmental contamination.
Disease tracking, population surveillance. all controlled by AI, by the way.
And so on. So the objects that we've created consist of two parts. One is an electronic functional component that has an overall size scale in the range of 1 millimeter. So almost like a tiny grain of sand. But we've integrated with that electronic chip wing structures that form almost what looks like a helicopter. And so as these structures fall through the air, in interaction between the air and those wings cause a rotational motion that creates a very stable, slow falling velocity that allows these structures to interact for extended periods with ambient wind that really enhances the dispersal process, much like seeds do in the biological world. We think we've beaten biology, in a sense.
Believe that? We think we have beaten biology. It says some of the microfibers are built with a material developed in Roger's lab that will allow them to naturally degrade and disappear in around water over time. So you can have one of these things go into your body, you would never even know it. And they would have all that information about you. The implications, folks, of what you're seeing here is unbelievable. And it's not just the fact that they're, you know, that they're actually pulling data in. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has more to do with what they're doing with the data that they have. They're able to make connections with that data that, you know, most researchers are going to struggle to be able to make because they don't have enough manpower to make the calculations necessary to be able to understand, you know, what exactly is being said or what exactly is being done. And I think that this is something that is so unbelievably significant. And this is a very, very critical aspect of what's happening. And by the way, if you think that's a big deal, right, then what about what Elon Musk has recently done with Neuralink? And we've seen things all over the news that are talking about this. Here's one example of a recent news story regarding this.
Dr. Leah Kroll joins me now for more just on this discussion and the operation. So Dr. Kroll, Musk says that the first human users will be people who've lost the use of their limbs. So let's get right to the science. I mean, how does and will this actually work?
Great to see you, Kira. This area of science is not...
I just want to say about those little flying microchips, it's scary. This stuff could be floating around now, and we don't even know anything about it. And you could easily breathe it in, like you said, because it could be like dust, and it might be, you might think your allergies are just acting up, and you breathe in some of these particles they've deployed. So much for what Yuval Harari said about not releasing these things before you've had a chance to test it and inform people of it.
So here's how it works. Neuralink designed a device that functions like an electrode or a specialized sensor. That device gets implanted into the brain, and then it reads the electrical signals that our brain cells are constantly sending to each other. Those signals will ultimately get translated into actions outside of the body. In this case, we're specifically talking about controlling a computer or a smartphone app.
Wow, so you mentioned that this could be a major game changer in the piece. You're reiterating it now, but it needs to be proven safe and effective as well, right? So how will the company go about making sure that it is?
Safe and effective, where have we heard that before?
Such a good point. Safety is absolutely top of mind right now. And in fact, you can tell in Elon Musk's statement that he was pointing out that the person who received the implant is recovering well, so he knows that. The way that we ensure this is the way we ensure the safety and efficacy of any medical treatment, and that's by conducting rigorous clinical trials. So in the case of Neuralink, their trial lasts about 6 years. The first 18 months of it are kind of this short follow-up period where people are checking in with the investigators very frequently, making sure that things are functioning properly, that safety is intact, that nothing is going wrong. And then for the following 5 years, they continue to see the investigators regularly, but there we're really looking for long-term effectiveness.
So, and by the way, I want to say this, and I don't think we need to go on any further with this story, but the investigators that she's talking about are not just human investigators. They are artificial intelligence investigators, folks. This is the type of thing that we have to continue to remind you guys of. This, all of what we're watching here is, in essence, the modern-day Tower of Babel. And this is what we're watching. We are watching a time and a day where men and women are choosing to replace the general consciousness of God, or remove the general consciousness of God, by replacing God himself. And all the AI that we're seeing around us is signs of all of that. By the way, there are so many other areas where AI is involved, right? Customer service phone calls, chatbots. AI is involved in the production of your food. Matter of fact, on a significant level, it's been involved in the production of food for a long time. If you've eaten a cracker, you very likely have been eating something that has been manipulated by AI in one way or another. If you have eaten at a fast food restaurant, you have eaten food that's been manipulated by AI in one way or another. Folks, I'm telling you this. You have to listen to me. It's absolutely everywhere. All the stuff that we're seeing right now is everywhere. It's not. In every single way. As a matter of fact, I've talked about this. There are many pastors that are out there right now, and this is tragic. This is terrible, but it's actually happening. There are pastors that are out there right now that are utilizing AI to teach Bible studies. Right? They're going to ChatGPT or tools very similar to that, and they're actually saying, "Hey, write me a Bible study," and they're going and they're preaching the sermons that, of course, ChatGPT has made for them. And this is the ugly, nasty world that we're living in. And it's getting darker and darker and darker and darker and darker, and those things continue to be utilized as such. As a matter of fact, AI is being used to scan and predict the type of things people are saying to restrict or limit free speech. AI is being used on so many different levels to create a new society and a new world, in essence, a new world order. And folks, I'm telling you this right now, we are here. We are in this new world order. We are rapidly approaching the end times, the last days. And folks, we got to wake up. It's happening. And I have to say this, because more than ever, we need to be on guard. We need to be on guard. Sunday, I'm going to talk about a video. I'm releasing a video that dramatically affected me. I mean, it disturbed me so deeply, and it involves something in AI, and it's the new type of pornographic material. And I'm telling you, it is destroying lives so rapidly, so exponentially. We got to open up our eyes. We got to wake up. Now, here's what we do. Right? It's very, very simple. And I can't even begin to talk about how critical this is, right? The Bible tells us to be filled with the Spirit of God. The Bible tells us to seek the Lord. Look, there's a passage that I think is important to read, and it really has an effect on how we live our lives and the things that we do. And it's based on a simple psalm, right? Now, there's many passages like this, but this one really means a lot to me, especially in the world of AI, right? It's something to me that just means a lot. Let me read this to you. It says, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful." But notice this. This is the part that I'm just really attaching to right now. "But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper." I don't know about you, but I think more than ever I want to be a person that holds very steadfastly to the Word of God. The Word of God is the only thing that we are ever going to be able to have to give us what is necessary in order to be sustained in the world in which we live. Guys, listen to me. The darkness is getting darker, and the world is changing rapidly. And more than ever, we must hold on to what the Bible tells us. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16, it says this. It says, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for what? For doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, right? And by the way, when it talks about being given to us in instruction for righteousness, the purpose of that instruction is given to us in verse 17. It says that the man of God may be perfect, meaning fully encapsulated, right? Thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Read the Bible. Know the Bible. Understand what the Word of God says. Lean in on the Spirit of God to live the way that you know God wants you to live, and watch God do amazing things. That's where it is.
So that's the video on that, and just to show how a mess this is in our lives already at this point. And I wanted to read another scripture to add to what he read there at the end. I want to go to 1 John 4, beginning at verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and is now already in the world. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. They are of the world, therefore they speak as of the world, and the world hears them. We are of God. He who knows God hears us. He who is not of God does not hear us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. We just have to pray for discernment. And speaking of spirit of Antichrist, let's see if I can play this. This is another Yuval Harari video where he was taught, where I referred to about hacking humans. So we're going to play this for you to hear a good example of what the spirit of Antichrist sounds like.
AI, because it's become, I mean, from the time you wrote about it to where we are now, this seems closer to the things you wrote. It's moving fast. You did talk about how we will reach a point where AI will be able to hack a human.
Yeah.
Do you see that now far closer? And are we already there? Could you explain to us?
What happened? I mean,
yes.
The idea of hacking human, we are used to talking about hacking computers, and smartphones, and things like that. But we are increasingly seeing corporations, governments, acquiring the ability to hack a human being. What does it mean to hack a human being? It means to understand me better than I understand myself, to be able to predict my feelings, my thoughts, my choices, and increasingly also to manipulate them. Because if you can predict my feelings and choices, you also know how to manipulate me. What do you need in order to do this? You need a lot of data, a lot of information, and a lot of computing power.
Yes.
Now, previously in history, nobody had that. Even if you think about somebody like Stalin in the Soviet Union, he wanted to follow everybody all the time, but he couldn't. He didn't have the technology. In the Soviet Union, you can put a KGB agent to follow somebody all the day. But there are 200 million people in the Soviet Union. You don't have 200 million KGB agents. And even if you do have 200 million agents, what do? They work, they follow me all day. They write a report at the end of the day on some piece of paper. They send it to headquarters in Moscow. Somebody needs to read 200 million papers every day.
I interpret what that means. Yes.
It's impossible.
Yes.
So it was impossible to hack all everybody like this. Now it is becoming possible. You don't need a KGB agent to follow you. You have the agent in your own pocket. Your smartphone, your computer, somebody else's computer or smartphone follows you, collects data on you all the time. And also you don't need human analysts to read all these papers. You have algorithms that analyze the information. So it is possible now for the first time in history to completely annihilate privacy, to follow everybody all the time, to know more about me than I know about myself. And this is very frightening. This is extremely dangerous. You know, it can be used for some good purposes, like providing us with better healthcare, alerting us, look, there is this disease starting, let's try to take care of it when it's still very easy. But it can be used to create the worst totalitarian regime in human history, something far more extreme than anything we've seen in the Soviet Union or in communist China or in Nazi Germany. Again, it's not inevitable, it's not a prophecy. We can prevent it by making the right regulations, by building the right technology. That's one of the biggest choices we face as humans today. And I said, it's especially important that the young people are aware of it.
Mm.
Because, you know, they are very often online all the time, all their social life. And they should realize that all this immense amount of information on me, I'm giving it
yes.
to these corporations or to the government. And what will they do with it? And also, it's not just the information I give. It's also the information I take in. That we are now flooded by enormous amounts of information, which, again, AI and algorithms are kind of manipulating, using it to manipulate how we think. You know, it's like, you know, like you play piano. So now these algorithms are learning how to play on our emotional system, how to generate hatred, how to generate fear in people's minds. So, you know, people are sometimes very careful about what they eat, the food that goes into their body. They should be equally careful about what they feed their minds. We need an information diet for the mind.
Listen, paying $14.99.
Okay, and that's how the Antichrist spirit will operate. And think about it. The Bible talks about God and how he's all-knowing. He knows the thoughts and intentions of our hearts. Frequently in the Gospels, it would talk about the Lord Jesus and how he knew all things. He knew their thoughts as it relates to the Pharisees and the things that they were thinking. And the devil, through the Antichrist, wants to be like the Most High. So he's going to use all this technology to appear to have the attributes of God, especially his omniscience and omnipresence and omnipotent, although his all-powerful, all-knowing, everywhere at once. He will give the appearance of that through this technology. But as I just read, greater is he that is in you than he who is in the world. And that has been my time. I thank you so much for yours. Have a great rest of your day and week, and we will see you next time.